Hi, this is Joey Fite from thephysicaleducator.com.
And this is Nathan Horn from iphysed.com.
And this is the Phys Ed Podcast. Felt very rusty just doing it right off the bat there. It's been a while. How you been, Nathan?
Good, Joey. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Just wrapped up an awesome week teaching. A little crazy this week. I had a student teacher start, which is really exciting. But yeah, just been keeping busy. What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, we've been on break this week. Just spent 5 nights in Bali, which was really nice. Rest and relaxation after the first sort of the first part of the year was pretty full on. And yeah, just before that was in Dubai at the Connected PE conference.
Oh yeah, so sweet. So I was following that on Twitter a bit, and I did talk to Andy a bit about it. But I'd love to hear how was it.
Yeah, it was great.
First of all, how great was it seeing everybody in person again?
Oh, it was amazing. It was one of the things that I love the most about going to conferences is catching up with all those people again that I haven't seen for a while. So it was really cool to catch up with Naomi and Andy, and then also Adam Laveau and Dan Inman and all those people that I'd sort of met at other conferences, whether it was the PE Institute or APEC last year, or there's also a few people from the conference in Munich that we were both at
nice.
Last year. It was Shane, the Gopher.
Spielhoff.
Yeah, Spielhoff. Shane, the Gopher guy, was there, and Kirsten and Diane Olive and all those people. So it was really cool to catch up with those people again, and then also to meet some new people. It was really amazing. I think one of the great things about the conference being in Dubai was it really opened up a lot of access to people who don't have access to PE conferences like that. So there was a huge group of teachers that came up from Africa. There's a heap of Kenyans that came up, some people from Ethiopia. Wow. And some other areas there that don't get a lot of access to PE conferences, and they were just super keen to learn. Which was really, really cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, for people that don't know, it was run by Jared, the PE geek. So it was his first foray into running a big conference, and he did an amazing job. Him and his partner, Amy, really did a fantastic job of doing the conference. It's always tough when you do your first conference, as an organizer,
any conference.
Yeah, exactly. And to have 165, I think, PE teachers from, you know, Europe, Africa, Asia, and the Middle East all in one place, it was pretty seamless, and they did a fantastic job. And, you know, it was, I only heard good reports from people, and I know that people are already looking forward to the next one coming around sometime soon.
Yeah, it sounded like a blast. I know, like, all the pictures you're seeing online. Again, just can't have that, like, that great feeling of community, right? Like, even just in how we're following on Twitter, like, the pictures that you're seeing, like, everybody's, like, trying to report something off. It's nice knowing that you've always got your phys ed family and that you get to see them every now and then.
Yeah.
What sessions did you present?
So I did the opening keynote, which was a new one for me. So I spoke about the idea of defining your purpose as a physical educator and really making sure that everything that you do throughout your physical education practice is directly aligned to that purpose, and really sort of trying to deliver the way that you think about planning, the way that you think about assessment, the way that you think about your daily practice, like really with intent towards that purpose. So I talked about my purpose being that I wanted to develop the physical literacy, not only of my students, but of the entire community which I serve. So whether that's parents, whether that's, you know, colleagues, students, anyone within that community, and how I go about doing that through purposeful planning, through the way that I assess, and through the way that I put that into practice. So that was really, that was the first, I was like right at the start of the conference. And I think, you know, I was actually quite nervous about it because I hadn't done that keynote before. And I took a leaf out of Andy's wife Neela's book, and I did a little visualization at the start of the keynote. So I asked everybody to close their eyes and visualize some different things. And that was like, I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. I thought, you know, this is either going to be great, people are going to really love it, or it's just going to bomb and nobody's going to close their eyes. But people were really into it, which was good. So I did that as the opening keynote, and then I presented a masterclass, which I did 2 times, which was on basically how to, I guess, put that into practice. So I gave some examples of how I plan, and how we did some assessment tasks, and we did some sort of designing games and building games up at different levels, and changing games in different ways using different sort of using the change it framework. I don't know if have you heard of the change it framework?
No, I haven't.
So it was really interesting. I only found it a while ago, and I'll be sure to link it in the show notes. But it came out of the Australian Sports Commission, their sporting schools program. So it's this whole idea of that, like, if a game's not working or something's not working, you should change it. And that there's different ways that you can change it. So you could change the way that you're teaching it, the way that, how many players are playing the game, the equipment. So each of the letters, Change It, refers to a different area
Okay.
of the way that you could change that game. And like for a lot of people, when I presented that, you can, when you're presenting, you can just see people's eyes light up, and they're like, "Oh my God, like that's amazing. I can take that back and use it straight away." So that was really cool to see that. And then just to give people some assessment, ideas as well. And I think probably one of the best things for me at a conference was seeing people go back to their schools, and within the next couple of days, they were tweeting out pictures of them trying things that they'd seen in the workshop, but not only trying them, but having adapted them to fit their context that they were in. And that was
That's
something that I
awesome.
really focused on a lot in both the keynote and the workshops was, like, it's really easy to go to a conference or a workshop and see a lot of stuff and take it back and just copy it and put it in your school. But the thing is that we all work within different contexts. So to be able to take something and modify it for the context that you're in, I think is like, that's really what I think we should be aiming for when we go to these workshops and conferences, is how can we use all these great things and great ideas, but put them back into our context in a way that's going to work for the people and the students in our context. So I was super happy with the way that my presentations went, my keynote went, and I was just stoked that people took value from it and went back and used it in their schools in ways that was meaningful for their students.
That's awesome, man. So I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So obviously you're there as like a presenter and everything, and you're pumped to see that like what you presented had an impact on others. What would be one big takeaway you got from that conference as a teacher? So what's a big idea that you took away from it that helped you be a better teacher when you got back?
Yeah, for sure. I saw a lot of different
To By the
people.
way, totally putting Nathan on the spot right now. We did not talk about
No,
this
that's
before
fine. No, it's good.
recording.
Definitely, it's a great question. No, like it was cool. Like I went to a few sessions. A lot of the sessions, actually, a few of the sessions that I wanted to go to were on at the same time as my session, so I didn't actually get a chance to go. Like I really
Okay.
wanted to go and see Dean Dudley present his practical session, and actually, he was in the gym. We're in a gym that was separated by a curtain. He was on one side and I was on the other. So it was a bit of a battle of who can shout the loudest.
My money's on Dean.
Yeah, Dean was definitely winning. So I wanted to see his. So I missed his, but I did like drop in at a few other sessions. I saw a guy, Jace Ferguson, who's actually based in Dubai. He's a Canadian guy. He did a really cool session on assessment, which was really cool because I felt like what he was sharing was really well aligned with my ideas around assessment. So that was cool to sort of see someone who was on a similar sort of path to me, and we had some good chats throughout the weekend, just about the different things we were doing. But probably the big thing that I took away was actually Dean's keynote, which he gave on physical literacy, and in typical Dean fashion, like Dean doesn't pull any punches whatsoever on Twitter. In person, he doesn't pull any punches. But I love him for it. He's amazing, and it was really cool to meet him in person for the first time. But he talked about the idea of he sort of gave an alternative view to the idea of physical literacy, and he framed it all around the way literacy has been taught and the way that literacy is defined within our society. And actually, that literacy is only a word that really existed in English for a long time. Like the word literacy doesn't really exist in other languages.
It's
So
funny you say that because the translation for physical literacy in French, and I can't remember off the top of my head, but I remember reading and being like, That doesn't make any sense. I think it's like the savoir faire physique, which is like physical know-how,
Yeah.
which I guess kind of like, but yeah,
Yeah.
anyway, sorry.
So no, it's fine. He said, yeah, well, I mean, exactly. That's what he was sort of talking about. Like he talked about, if you said literacy to somebody, I mean, if I say literacy to you right now, what's the first thing that jumps into your mind?
Reading.
Yeah, reading and writing are the
Yeah.
first things, but actually, in other languages, that's not what literacy would be considered as. So he sort of talked about that, and he talked about these four pillars of literacy, that it's not only reading and writing, but it's the power of language and how language can hold different power structures within society. And sort of, he talked about these four pillars of literacy and how that's been defined by UNESCO and all these things, and that we have hundreds of years of research behind that, and how that sort of has, the literacy rate of the human population has increased significantly over the last, 100 years. There are far more people now who are considered literate than 100 years ago. And he sort of proposed these four pillars of physical literacy,
Okay.
and how that we could, if we viewed it in this way, and then if everybody around the world had the same sort of view of physical literacy, because there are a lot of different views around physical literacy right now, with different,
Yeah.
like he sort of showed all these different definitions, whether it's, the International Physical Literacy Association, whether it's PHE Canada, whether it's AACHPA, whether it's, everybody has a different
Shape
idea,
America.
Shape America. So he's sort of proposing these four pillars, and how these four pillars could help us to actually have a more defined idea of what physical literacy is, and also enable it to be a bit more measurable. It's actually part of a paper, I think, that he's going to be publishing very soon.
Okay.
So I don't have, it's not like I can sort of pull it up and look at it and
Yeah.
tell you what these four pillars are, but he is publishing it really soon. And I think for me, it was really interesting to hear him speak about that, and to hear the way that he sort of was framing it against the idea of literacy, and how, there's a lot of evidence that supports that, and that if we need to basically get some more evidence on our side, and then hopefully, in the same way that literacy has improved a heap over the last 100 years, that hopefully physical literacy will do the same within the next 100 years.
That's awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
He's
Also,
pretty smart,
Andy,
that Dean.
he is very smart. Also,
Yeah.
Andy did a really cool keynote as well, where he didn't really talk about PE. He talked about music. So he used three musical stories. He talked about like an 18th century composer. He talked about
Leonard Cohen.
Leonard Cohen and the idea of Alleluia and the different iterations of that. And then he talked about Eminem.
Which I'm sure Jared loved.
Jared absolutely loved it. But that was really cool. He sort of finished the keynote, finished the conference off with that keynote. And it was cool to hear him take a completely different angle. And everything he talked about related to PE, but yet it was all music. So, yeah, it was a really cool conference. And as a teacher, I got a lot out of it. Not only sort of just being a presenter, I think sometimes I've been really guilty of this in the past, of going to conferences as presenters and then sort of not really taking the time to go to other sessions and just be a learner.
Yeah.
But this time I tried to go and learn as much as I could in other sessions.
Yeah, and you're saying that, and this past summer, and I know we weren't gonna get onto all that stuff, but I went to that EPU conference in California in San Luis Obispo, Cal Poly, which was an amazing experience. It was a 5-day conference, or a workshop. But it was nice. I was presenting every day, but I was really going out of my way to make sure that I was attending at least two or three sessions a day. I got to see Terry Drain do a lot of amazing work. And as a presenter, I find like I get so caught up in like going and like presenting and focusing on my sessions and everything because it's stressful. It's not like an easy thing to just go up and present. Like even if it's something you're familiar with, like it's always a little difficult. But man, it was so nice being at a conference and just learning a lot. And like some of it was like little, like tiny little ideas that I might bring into my teaching or just like one game or activity that I was like, that was awesome. But I was so fired up by the end of it and then went straight into my honeymoon and
Yeah.
Jess was pissed because I just kept talking about phys ed for like the first 3 days of our honeymoon. But no, man, like I'm really looking forward to, like, I want to make a big effort for every future conference I go to make sure that I'm attending as much as possible. Yeah. So I'm learning as much as possible and keep growing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the year I've been having anyways. Like I've really been laser focused on my teaching. So like, I think also like I'm feeling that need that like I want more and like, I want to be learning more. And I want to keep growing. So, so that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah. Too. So tell me a little bit about your year so far and your teaching and stuff.
Wow, what a while. First of all, I think it's like the third week of September and we're like, October's done right now. Like, it's insane like how fast everything's gone by. The year's been great. Really, really positive start to the school year. Again, now I'm teaching with my now officially sister-in-law. So my brother and my teaching partner got married in
September.
Keeping
it in the family.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Alex and I, we get along so well and the work we're doing together has been amazing. And like, just the way we're building up the program has been a lot of fun, but no, this year, like I have this block. I don't know if I've talked about it before.
Yes.
And it's a little graphic, and on the graphic, like on the Y axis is work and at the bottom, talk at the top. And then there's like three figures. If you can visualize this, there's an upside down triangle, meaning you're all talk, no work. There's a normal triangle or pyramid, sorry, that's your all work, no talk. And then there's just like this like prison that's like equal of both. And I got that. I've known about it for the longest time. And this year, like, I was thinking about my teaching and I feel like I used to be like, so the one that's a prison where it's equal talk, equal work, that's you're hustling. That's being a hustler. And the one where you're all talk, no work is when you're a charlatan. And when you're no talk, all work, you're a martyr. And I honestly started to feel like I'd become like a charlatan in my teaching, because here I am going around like promoting all these best practices, and I wasn't even doing I wasn't even doing like a spectacular job at applying them all in my own teaching. I was doing them, yeah, but like for a lot of them, I was just kind of like scratching the surface, like the way I was going about my assessment and breaking things down and presenting learning to students and all that. And this year, for whatever reason, and honestly, I attribute it a lot to the conference I had, the EPU conference, the Elementary Physical Education Workshop in California. But I came down, I was like, I'm very comfortable being a martyr this year, not talking at all. So you'll notice like I'm not on social media a lot, and I'm just laser focused on my teaching, and it's been fantastic. It's my third year at St. George's. I finally really feel like I'm an accepted member of the community. Where like I'm no longer being compared to teachers that were there before me, and it's no longer seen as like other people's programs that I took over, but started seeing as like the program that Alex and I are building. This year we're taking it to the next level, so we're really trying to build up a culture of physical literacy at the school. And what I mean by that is that we're trying to get everybody to really understand the concept of physical literacy and to celebrate their own physical literacy. And there's going to be some things I'm going to be sharing soon, because I'm in the process of putting it together, but like it's fun seeing the whole community come in and like want to share how their physical literacy has developed throughout their lifetime, and like parents and teachers and everything. Like, it's been really cool getting to see that. But in the teaching, like the big part of it is I show the kids this pyramid, okay, and it's in three pieces. At the top, the top piece is adventure. So I don't know if you've seen the North Face ad. It's called
Amazing.
Max Your Days.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's a sick ad. It's super cool.
It's BC.
Yeah, it is. And I showed it to all my students just as like stealing a page out of Andy's book, a provocation, to get the kids to think about like, think of the type of life that these people have, or this type of life that's being presented here. And like, what's exciting about it? It's like, well, they're going on all these crazy adventures and everything. It's like, okay, what are some adventures that you would want to go on? And then through different activities in the class, I had kids like sharing activities they've been on, sharing activities they'd want to be on. And then we brought it in. I was like, what do you think is like the number one key to being able to live as many adventures and get the most out of each and every day? And that's when we find out that bottom piece of the pyramid, so they know the top part is adventure, the bottom piece is health, right? Your health is your key to all of life's adventures. Without your health, you can't go out and do that. So we talk about the importance of health and why, like in everything we do in school, health is it's our founding principle. Health must come first. We talk about how health is our greatest wealth. And that we're going to focus in everything we do to be healthy, not just in phys ed class, not just in athletics, but in every aspect of the school, we want to focus on being healthy. And then that middle piece, so the adventure at the top, health on the bottom, that middle piece is this idea of physical literacy. And I loved, loved, loved Shape America's kid-friendly standards that they came out with and their kid-friendly definition for for physical literacy, which is basically that you know how to be active and you want to be active. And then I show them, okay, what's physical literacy going to look like here? Well, we're going to pick up a lot of skills. We're going to pick up a lot of knowledge. We're going to pick up a lot of understandings. We're going to apply those until we become competent in them. And with that, we're going to become confident in a lot of things. We want to be confident in everything we're doing. And I use different provocations to show that. But anyways, this big old rant here I'm doing is that everything we do in class now, we tie it back to our physical literacy journeys. And I was lucky enough to be given some time at our curriculum night to talk to the entire parent community. And I gave this little, like, it was a 3-minute presentation on what our program's about. And I figured in 3 minutes, like, I'm not going to have time to tell them, like, what kind of units we do or what kind of trips we go on. I'm going to talk to them about the why of the program, and I talked about physical literacy. I got people to reflect, and this is something I got from Terry Drain again. I got people to reflect on how they were active when they were kids. I got them to reflect on how they were active when they were teenagers, when they were young adults, and how they're active today. And to share that with the people sitting around them and seeing that all their journeys are different, but that's not something that doesn't make anything wrong. It just means it's something that should be celebrated, the fact that we're all physically literate in our own unique ways, and that's what we want for their children, and that's what we're trying to build on. And same thing for the kids, I think, and I'm starting to see it a lot in my grade 6 class, where every kid's getting very comfortable with the idea that, okay, like, this person here in class is a superstar at everything we do, but they're realizing that they don't need to be that person. They can be themselves, and they can still enjoy moving, and they can still be confident moving. Anyways, I'm getting all worked up about
it. No, it's good.
All that to say that I freaking love teaching. Holy smokes, is it a draining job.
Yeah.
I'm so tired right now. And like with the student teacher, now I'm teaching somebody how to teach at the same time that I'm teaching. But there's just nothing I would rather do with my day than work with these young people that I get to work with and just help them be physically literate and help them be good people. You know, like I was telling you, like we were trying to find time to record this podcast, and I haven't had a break. Like last I was telling you earlier, like last weekend I had this big soccer tournament that was like a 3-day tournament that we're at. This weekend we have open house at our school, so we're all prepping for open house to showcase the school. The weekend before the soccer tournament, I was on the grade 6 leadership trip. The weekend before that, I was on the grade 5 leadership trip. And it's great because, like, as much as, like, I miss being in my classes, I don't like being away from my classes, I feel like I have a really good idea of how my school's trying to tackle this big construct of, like, leadership, of what student leadership looks like. And that's making me, it's making me a better teacher. It's making me a better coach. It's making me a better member of the school community because I'm bringing those lessons that I know that they're seeing and bringing into everything I do now. So just these leadership trips that we were on were crazy. I know you were telling me that I'd be curious because like how does your school take on leadership in regards to developing it in your students?
Yeah. So we've gone through some changes this year, with our school, I guess, in terms of like our middle leadership structure in terms of our staff. So previously we used to have grade level leaders, so there'd be like one lead teacher for each grade level, but this year we sort of, the school did away with that, and they've put all of these different positions in place. So we have like a inclusion coordinator, we have a math coordinator, a literacy coordinator, I'm in the position of like head of student welfare and enrichment. We also have like a student action coordinator. We have like all these coordinated positions. So rather than just focusing on like one grade level and making sure that grade level is doing good stuff, is like making sure that the whole school is doing good stuff in that area. So I work pretty closely with the student action coordinator.
So what would a student action coordinator's job be?
So, I mean, she's a classroom teacher as well. So she's teaching a class, but she's also looking at ways that students can take meaningful action within the school and within the community. So basically like with her, we sort of last year before the role came into being this year, cause I've been in the student welfare and enrichment role for a little while. And that really just was focusing on more on our house system at the school. So our house events, as well as looking at the pastoral care curriculum that we have. So we sat down and we looked at our student leadership structure and the way that we were doing it. And previously what we had was we had these house captains, which were voted on by grade five students. And then we had student council, which was two students from every class, again, voted on by their peers. And what we found was, like a lot of class votes, you just end up with these students who are the popular kids and maybe aren't really that ideally suited to leadership positions. So yeah. We said, well, how can we do this in a way that is going to enable students who are actually really interested in becoming leaders and have leadership skills to actually do this? And so we basically, in some ways, we headhunted some students and we said to them, look, we think that you'd be really good at this. Would you be interested in doing it? And we opened it up for application. And we actually made, so instead of having our student council, we now have this team, which we call the Student Action Leadership Team, or SALT, the SALT team. And we actually made it an after-school activity, extracurricular activity. So if the students wanted to be a part of that, then they had to basically apply and give up one of their afternoons after school a week to do that. Because what we identified is that, like, part of being a leader is sometimes having to give up time that maybe you would be using for something else to give that service to other people. So we got a really great group of kids ranging from grade two to grade five. I think there's about 12 or 13 of them who were really interested in that. And so they've signed up to do that. And they've basically taken over the running of assemblies. So they now run the assemblies. There's no teacher. It used to be the principal or the assistant principal who'd run the assembly. The kids run the assembly now. They do all the prep for it. They do the agenda for the assembly. They present the assembly. They've done some other work around the school. We have a partnership with a food bank here where we collect food to donate to the food bank. So they've been involved in that. And then on the other side, I'm working with so instead of having house captains, we've renamed them house leaders. And again, I sort of headhunted some kids for that who I thought would be really good leaders. And they've been organizing some different house events around the school, whether it's during lunchtime or we have this time on Friday afternoons, I guess once a month or so, where we do a big full school house event. And they've been working on that. And again, amazing. It's been amazing to see the difference in, rather than just being kids who have been voted in because they're the popular kids, there's actually these kids are really invested in wanting to actually help the school and wanting to do things for their peers and for the community to make the school a better place. And I feel like, you know, after we've been at school, I think 10 or 11 weeks now, it's been a huge difference in the culture of the school and a huge difference in the way that students really take control of the learning and take control of the things that are happening around the school.
That's awesome, man, because it sounds like, so like I was saying, like we do like a lot of leadership stuff at my school, but sometimes when I see the students doing it, I'm worried that they're not being totally authentic in what they're saying, right? So sometimes you'll see kids, like they'll say something that they think that you want them to say as a leader, as opposed to saying something that they're saying because they're finally starting to grasp that idea of leadership. And it sounds like you have like real, like authentic leadership being displayed at your school. We tried doing student assemblies that were led by the students, and we had like two really successful ones. But then there was no build up off of it.
I think the key thing is, and this is something that we identified when we were going through this process of change, was that like we can't expect students, especially in elementary school, to be leaders unless we give them tools to be leaders. So we identified that we really need to give them training and support. So myself and Tammy, who's the student action coordinator, we've really tried to spend a lot of time with the kids in the first part of the year, is giving them the skills that they need to be able to actually follow through on the things that they want to do. And it's something that I worked a lot last year with. I had a lot of kids last year who came to me who weren't house captains or weren't class leaders, but just wanted to have these house events. oh, we want to have an art competition, or we want to have, you know, a lunchtime soccer matches, and we want to do this and we want to do that. And like, I think the hardest thing for them to understand was like, yeah, great. Like, I really want that to happen. But before it does, you need to think about X, Y, and Z. How are you going to organize this? How are you going to promote it? How are you going to make sure that everyone can be involved? How are you going to, and so being able to sit with these kids and give them the time and to give them the direction and to help them to understand that, like, it's great to have these ideas, but to actually be able to, part of being a leader and part of putting that into practice is considering all these other things that maybe you didn't think of before. And I could see with some kids that they were getting super frustrated because they're like, can't we just want to do it. We just want to play these soccer games. And actually, so they, a couple of them, they did it. And the first couple of games really bombed, and like, they didn't have enough kids playing on one team, or the referee didn't know really what to do. And it, it's sort of like for them to then reflect on that and say like, well, hang on, we need to think about all these other things first before we can do it again. So I think it's good because it's become part of the culture of the school now. Is kids know that if they want to take action, they want to do something for the community, that they have to have a really solid plan in place first before it can actually happen. So they'll either go to one of the student leaders, or they'll come to me or Tammy. They'll sort of pitch this idea. We'll give them some feedback. They'll go away. They'll work on it. They'll come back and pitch it again. And we'll sort of work together as a team to make it work so that it is successful. Because I think the worst thing that can happen for students, if they want to try and do something in that space, is for them to do it and it just bomb, and then they lose all their confidence, mm-hmm. and then they never want to sort of do that again. So yeah, we're really lucky, I guess, in our school. Like, we're only just over 200 kids in our elementary school. So it's a nice little community feel, and kids feel confident coming and pitching these ideas. And they know that they're going to get that support, and that there's going to be people there who are going to help them along the way to make their idea a reality.
That's awesome, man. I wish our schools, like, the time zones weren't such a big difference, because I feel like your students would get along very well with my students.
Yeah.
Because even just hearing the way, like, you have kids coming and pitching ideas, like, well, I'll tell you a little bit how leadership works at my school, but then, like, I just get that all the time. And, like, I've started telling kids, like, you have to write a proposal, and they're writing freaking proposals, and they're writing amazing proposals that are, like, better than anything I could produce.
Yeah.
So, like, this year, like, so my school kind of has, like, a K to 11, so remember, we only go to grade 11, leadership program. And it starts off, like, in K, it's very simple. It's, like, doing, like, an overnight trip. They go to the Biodome, which is, like, it's like a Earth zoo.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to describe it. But they sleep at the Biodome and everything. So it's just, like little, like, steps like that. Grade 1, go, like, on little trips and whatnot where they have to, like, manage a few things. Really, everything kicks off in grade 3, but it makes more sense, like, if it's in grade 4 first. So in grade 4, the kids go to La Ferme d'André, which is a farm not too far. It's about an hour, maybe an hour and a half away from our school. And it's a sweet spot. Like, it's a farm. There are farm animals. There are woods. Like, it's a cool place to hang out and everything. And really, while the kids are there, we talk. We have, like, meaningful talks about, like, who we are as people and, like, why we love, like, or, like, why we like being part of the school, or what, like the importance of our relationships with others and, like, all this kind of stuff. And it's sweet. And my school does this insane thing called reading circles. I don't know if you've ever seen one before. It's the weirdest, like, the first time I saw it was the weirdest thing. So basically everybody sits in a circle. Like, if you've seen it before, you know it, but for those of you who don't know it, you're sitting in a circle, everything's silent, and somebody gives a nod, meaning somebody can start. And then somebody just starts reading. They start reading what they reflected on. And when they're done reading, they stop. And then somebody picks up right away. But there's not, like, a big gap in between, like, when somebody stops and somebody picks up. And you keep doing until everybody in the circle is read. And it's, like, it's a safe space where, like, you don't judge anybody for what they're sharing. And this whole thing is you being willing to share your emotions and share how you're feeling. So it's really cool. So they do all this stuff in grade 4 in the fall. They go back to the farm in the spring in grade 4, except this time the grade 3s join them. So now the grade 4s have to make the grade 3s feel welcome and comfortable at the farm. So they're taking on that kind of like small like leadership role, just showing kids like where things are and like what the rules are, and like guiding them through like these like reflection activities. So that's grades 3 and 4, which is super sweet. Grade 5, we do Tairakar, which is French for heart to earth, or earth to heart. Mm-hmm. And we go to the Parkside Ranch here in the Eastern Townships in Quebec. And there it's really talking about values. It's about talking about character traits. It's about talking about relationships again, especially how we relate to nature, but also how in smaller pictures we relate to our communities, our school, our class, our friends, our families, and to ourselves. So lots of, and like really deep reflection. Like you hear some of the things these kids are saying and everything when they're talking about their values and they're talking about their, what kind of like characters they want to develop. And it just blows your mind. Like it just, it's so out of this world what they're willing to share openly with others. Mm-hmm. So they do that trip in grade 5, and then in grade 6, they go back to Parkside Ranch for the grade 6 leadership trip, where we're there, it's real discussions on leadership, what it means to be a leader, how to be a positive leader. This year, I brought in a little bit the idea of like servant leadership and leading by through service to others. And in January, the grade 6 then all have to select a community learning program where they get to run basically a project of their choosing. There are projects that are like, that have been done in the past are kind of like template projects. So if a kid doesn't really know what to do, they can do that. So like, for example, like being a reading buddy for somebody in grade 1 or something like that. But there's always some kids that have like crazy projects that are really cool. Like this girl in grade 6 this year, she has a lot of experience playing at a high level soccer. She wants to start a soccer camp for the juniors. This other kid plays Pokemon cards like mad. He wants to start a Pokemon league for like younger students and everything, teaching them how to play and setting up tournaments for them. So just all kinds of stuff like that, where come time for their community learning in grade 6, they have all this experience of reflecting on what it means to be a leader, reflecting on what kind of person they want to be, reflecting on the relationships towards others that then they can use. Like you were saying before, that they have the tools now to be good leaders. Yeah. And we're not just putting them in a role and being like lead. We've been grooming them since they were like literally in kindergarten, really, to be leaders. And some of these kids, like, I was not that good at being like responsible and being like displaying leadership like at that age. Like I just remember being like a total like goofball kid.
Yeah.
And they're still goofy and they're still kids, but they're just able to achieve amazing things, and just it blows my mind.
Yeah. It's one thing I think we forget all the time is like you wouldn't expect like you wouldn't just put a kid or an adult in now you're going to teach a class if you didn't have any training to do that, or like you wouldn't say, okay, go and be a mechanic or go and do this without any training. Yet within schools, I think a lot of the time we just like tell kids or we expect kids to do things that they just don't have the experience or the knowledge or the skills to be able to do. So being able to like give them those leadership skills, I think is like so important. And like similar to what you were just saying, like we've like one of the things that we identified, there's a really great program out of New Zealand. And I'll share the resources in the show notes, and I'll share them with you if you want. It's called Growing Coaches or Growing Leaders, I think it's called. It's this whole program that was developed by New Zealand Sport to help develop leadership skills within students through sport. And like the first thing that it focuses on is me or you as a person. Like what makes you unique? What makes you a leader? And it sort of uses superhero as a sort of like analogy, like what superpowers do you have as a leader? Like what powers are you going to be able to give to people in the same way that like Superman or Batman helps people? I think it's so important. Like if a kid doesn't recognize within themselves what makes them unique as a leader and what skills and attitudes and values that they have that they can contribute to the community, then they're not going to be able to do that down the track.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, like that's one big thing that we talk to the kids about in grade 6, especially, is that you have to be able to lead yourself before you can lead others. And leading yourself comes from knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. And being able to stick to, like, again, like what they see in grade 5, their values and everything, being able to use those to make tough decisions in tough situations, and doing what needs to be done when it needs to be done in terms of moving the group forward or moving yourself closer to the goals. Yeah. But no, man, you're right. We totally have to be equipping the kids. But So like I was saying, like I went on all these trips. I didn't go to the farm trips this year because or the fall farm trip because I was coaching. And like I'm not gonna lie, like it's a bit of a pain, like being away. I was basically away for 3 weeks, because like now I'm super far behind in my assessment, and like I have reports coming up, and like I'm just kind of panicking and freaking out about that. And I was reflecting on it the other day, like I've restarted like journaling in the morning, just thinking about all this stuff that's going on in this head of mine. And what I realized is that like I was saying earlier, like being on these trips and being knowing what these kids are going through, not only meaning like the programming itself, but knowing what they're going through in terms of what they're sharing with the group, man, I feel like I have such a stronger connection with my students. I feel like I'm a way better teacher for them this year. Like I understand my students at a completely different level. And not only that, like I feel like I'm bringing a lot of these things that they were saying is this really strong leadership program that's part of the St. George's experience, but I'm able to bring key elements of that into my teaching. So like coaching soccer this season and like coaching like basketball coming up, Alex and I have been developing this thing where like, again, I'm really obsessed with pyramids this year. But the base of the top of the pyramid is performance. And below that is skill level. And underneath that, we say is game sense, so a tactical understanding of the game and strategies involved. And below that is your fitness level. But below that is character and attitude. And with soccer, like every huddle I brought the kids into, every pregame speech I gave, I tied it all back to character and attitudes. And you know, like our team historically has not been a very strong team. We have not had like strong athletic programs historically as a school. We're not known for that. But we started doing things like this a little bit last year, and this year especially hungry now. And just the impact it's had, like on that top of the pyramid, the performance idea, just by focusing on character, like talking to the kids about why are you proud to be at this school and why are you proud to be on this team? What do you love about this team? What do you love about this school? Getting them emotionally connected to what they're about to go do out there on the field. They came together as a team, and they were just all of the bickering and anything, or if there was any bickering and whatnot, like disappeared, and they were just able to achieve amazing things. And I started realizing it's like, shit, man, this stuff really works. Like this whole program is actually effective. Like there's actually like things happening, and like having all the teachers bought into it the way the school does it and everything, like yeah, it's making us a stronger school. And it's funny, like when you're in it and you're only looking at the little piece, you don't really see it. And when you take a step back and you look at the whole puzzle, you're like, man, this really works. Like this idea of like long-term planning and education.
And definitely
Anyways.
knowing your kids as well, like, is something that I think. Yeah, like I've talked a lot about it. I've talked about it with people like Aaron Beatley and Andy Vasley and stuff. It's like if you don't know your kids, if you don't know what they're interested in, what makes them tick, what issues they're having, then you can't be how can you be expected to provide them with an educational experience that's going to help them to develop as people? Like otherwise, you just sort of like. You know, it's that whole idea of like square peg in a round hole. Like we can't expect that, you know, everything we do is going to be appropriate for every student that we have. We need to be able to know where our students are at and know what they're interested in, know what they need help with, and what areas maybe they don't need help with, so that we can design the way that we give them experiences so that it's actually going to meet them where they're at, not just say, here's what we're doing, go and do it. So I think, yeah, the
And
better you know.
sorry, it's not just knowing their interests though too, it's knowing how they are going to react in specific situations. And you get to know that by watching them in a variety of situations. Like now that I've seen them on the trips, now that I've seen them in athletics, now that I've seen them in soccer, now that I've seen them school at recess and all that, now that I go watch their glee performances, now that I jump in ECAs like at the end of the day to see what they're up to and whatnot. I'm not just watching what the kid's interested in and what they're producing. I'm watching how they react in different situations. You know, it's been like the biggest change, my teaching, like I'm so proud of my teaching this year and how things are going. But like the biggest influencing factor I find, or the change I had that has had the biggest impact on my teaching, is I'm being so purposeful of the way that I group my students. And I'm really taking into consideration how I know that they interact with others within groups, and how I know I can get the most out of them in a specific situation, depending on the student grouping. So be it like dividing them based on ability level, or doing mixed ability levels, or even sometimes dividing them based on gender, or whatever it may be, I find that like taking that time, like, so like all the groupings all pre-made before I go in into a lesson. Like I check with the school, like my headmaster's assistant, so to see if anybody's absent that day. I do my student groupings and I go in and I'm just getting the best out of my students, and it's been huge. Like I behavior management's down, classroom management's down, and not only that, learning is definitely on the rise and it's definitely up. Like I have the assessment evidence to like prove it. But again, though, being able to do those like those meaningful groupings or those effective groupings comes from understanding how kids react in different situations.
Yeah.
The situations you're going to be putting them in based on the activity that you're doing in class.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Well, it sounds like you've had a really great start to the year.
Oh, I'm fired up, man.
Yeah.
I can't, you know what's going on with the website right now, and that's like it's being built, so I can actually get back to sharing stuff. Which, by the way, if you're listening to this, that's why I haven't been doing anything on the site, because it's like a house of cards right now. Like if I touch anything, it's just going to fall apart. So it's being completely rebuilt. I'm really excited, but I just can't wait to be sharing this stuff, but yeah. I'm also very happy, just super focused on my teaching right now. Like loving it.
Definitely. You definitely need that time to just like focus on what's really important, and that is the kids that are in front of you and your purpose. One thing that you are doing though, or has come back, which I know people are super pumped about, is PE chat. And I know that I've been really happy with the first couple of PE chats since they've been back.
Yeah. First of all, I want to formally apologize to everyone, and I've done it before.
You don't need to apologize.
I dropped the bomb PE chat. And I should never have dropped the ball in PE chat, because it's good for everyone and it's good for me. Like I miss PE chat. And also, like, I feel like I overcomplicate PE chat. I was talking to Adam Howell this summer about it. And I kept trying to figure out how we could, like, make the chat different and, like, make the chat more productive so it didn't just turn into a bunch of backslapping, because Dean's going to send, like, dog shit in a paper bag to my house if it turns into backslapping. But like getting back to like the roots of PE chat, having the community vote on topics, having good moderators, like moderating like different time zones, and just having like fun with it, like is so important. So PE chat is back. Our next chat is on Monday on meaningful assessment, which I'm really excited about. Actually, I had a great talk with my student teacher about assessment today. And yeah, you're back to your original Aussie time slot.
Yeah, looking forward to getting back to my people.
Yeah, the people's champ is back.
Yeah,
and yeah, we got Adam Levo in the UK right now. Adam's just been doing awesome stuff. It's really cool seeing him. Also, like, I love like all like his graphics and everything he's prepping for the chat. Like, this guy brings his A game to everything he does. He's not fooling around. Andy out in Dubai doing his thing too. Like, no, it's good. And then obviously Adam Howe, who's going for beard of the year on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Yo, his beard's looking fierce these days. Did you see that Instagram post I posted? I bought a bottle of wine the other day, and I swear to God, it was a picture of Adam Howell on it. Yeah. It was so funny.
Yeah.
19 Crimes. It's an Australian wine. It was the Shiraz, I think. There's a picture of Adam Howell on the front.
He's a secret. He's one of those people. It's like that like Nicolas Cage photo where there's like a photo of some guy back in the Civil War that looks exactly like Nicolas Cage. So yeah, it's like exactly. Adam Howell, same thing. He's really a convict from Australia, and he's somehow like survived for hundreds of years.
That's it.
So nice one. Well, maybe we should wrap this one up. It's been great to get back into the swing of things with the Phys Ed podcast, and I look forward to doing some more with you in the coming weeks and months.
Yeah, man, absolutely. We need to do this on a more regular basis. Our once every 2 year schedule just wasn't working out for anyone.
No, it wasn't. Life gets busy, things get in the way, but it's good to be back in chatting, and hopefully people we'll tune in again and listen to us ramble for a little while.
Yeah. Rambling did occur.
Yeah.
All right. Well, everybody, thanks so much for listening. Nathan, it's always a joy talking with you. It's good to see you, bud.
Yeah, you too, man. All right. See ya.